sometimes when we walk into a crisis, the company will have every TV on and laptops pulled up, and they're looking at all the media coverage coming in live, and there's just so much noise. Find some quiet and let's talk about who matters most to the business and what can we do.
I'm Patrick Pacheco, and you're listening to season 5 of In Good Companies from Cadence Bank, the podcast where we have your best interest at heart. Because at Cadence, we're much more than a financial services provider. We're a lifetime advocate driven by your success. Let's start this episode with a quick thought experiment. Imagine you're getting through the door to your office. It's a regular day, business as usual, or so you think. But when you get in, the phone's ringing, panic is in the air. It's clear that something's gone wrong. Do you know who to turn to? Do you have a plan of action? If the answer's no, don't panic. You're in the majority. 4 in 5 companies don't have a foolproof crisis management plan. But the thing is, most businesses have faced emergencies in the last 2 years. So today, we're doing the homework, and our guest is here to help.
My name is Sydney Isaacs. I am a managing director and head of the Houston office for H Advisors Abernathy.
Sydney knows what to do in a crisis. She has weathered every storm, from workplace misconduct to product recalls, cybersecurity to physical disasters. Her company, H Advisors Abernathy, is a communications advisor and one of the nation's leading crisis management firms. So her work, it goes far beyond PR strategy.
Frankly, a lot of what I do is telling companies not to say stuff and not to jump in to fill the void and not to get out and tell your side of the story too quickly.
Instead, Sydney helps companies come up with action plans and builds efficient teams of first responders. She also trains people to recognize crises before they occur. In short, she's who you want to call when everything goes south.
People, I meet them at a cocktail party and I tell them what I do and they say, I'm glad to have you on speed dial, but I hope I never have to talk to you ever again.
Well, that's not us. We want to talk to you, Sydney. We think prevention is better than cure. So in this episode, we learn from Sydney and her extensive career, which started at Abernathy nearly 20 years ago.
I needed a job when I was in college, and I got a summer internship, and so I've been there ever since. So we advise companies on all aspects of their communication strategies, really specializing in times of change. Crises, which we're going to be talking about today, but also mergers, acquisitions, litigation, proxy fights, bankruptcies. So we're looking for companies that have some sort of change or transition. And in Houston, there's a lot of that. Across industries, there's a lot of growth and IPOs, and it's a very cyclical industry within oil and gas. So you've got a lot of change. So it's a good market for what we do for the full life cycle of our clients.
Today, we're going to focus primarily on crisis management. So, what is a crisis? What type of situations are we talking about here?
Yeah, crisis is really broadly defined. I think most people think of a physical disaster. So, something blows up, there's crane collapse or a well blowout. Sometimes it's, unfortunately, mass shootings, that sort of stuff. But there's also other types of crises, categorize them as social, cultural type crises. Those would be things like an executive has done something inappropriate, or social issues, kind of like what we're seeing with Bud Light when they got a lot of criticism for some of their marketing efforts, or Disney and its dispute with Ron DeSantis. So companies navigating how and when do we contribute to discussions about social issues. That's a whole category of crises these days. As you can imagine, there's just so much going on in that area. And then the third category I would call broadly legal issues. So you have a product recall or a regulatory investigation or cybersecurity breach or bankruptcy. So it is very broad, which makes planning for crises sometimes difficult because there's no way that you can anticipate and plan for every single type of crisis that could befall you. And that's why companies get out ahead of themselves and then have to backtrack.
So, first thing to know, in business, when something comes up, it's either a physical disaster, a cultural problem, or a legal issue. But there's always a but. No two companies are the same. We all have different values and practices. To respond to crises consistently and adapt to new challenges, you'll need a flexible approach.
It's hard to anticipate every crisis that could happen and plan for every twist and turn. So you could put a lot of planning on paper and feel really prepared. But then, as you know, when something actually happens, a lot of that goes out the window. And you really have to have a more flexible approach. So we try to avoid hard and fast rules. And that's where we rely on principles. So it's a really pragmatic approach that generally starts with what you learned in kindergarten. So if someone needs help, help them. If you break something, fix it. If you need to tell someone something, tell it to them directly rather than playing a game of telephone. And other kind of principles that I know sound simple, and they are, but they can actually be really instructive in a crisis. And if you can adhere to a broad approach versus a hard and fast rule, it gives you a lot more flexibility in that crisis.
Yeah, you don't want to paint yourself into a corner at the very start and then be backpedaling for the rest of the time, I guess. So that kind of gets to the heart of some of these principles. So if you're having an emergency, I think your reflex is that we want to jump out there quickly and say something. Is that a good instinct? Is that a bad instinct? Or does that depend?
Yeah, it's a very human instinct. I think we all want to fill the void. And if somebody's saying something bad about your company and you think it's incorrect, you want to get out there and correct the record and tell your side of it. But the facts are evolving really quickly in a crisis situation. And what you think you know in the first hour is probably going to change. And the minute you put out information that turns out to be incorrect, even if it was with the best of intentions, you've now lost credibility with your stakeholders. It's a human reaction that if, you know, someone's really loud and they're beating down your door and your phone is ringing off the hook, that's where you're going to give your attention, right? But sometimes where your responsibility lies is with the victims, whoever's been affected. And that might not be the loudest voice. So slowing down is often our first word of advice. Work on fixing the problem, helping the people who need help, and then getting to media after that.
You heard Sydney. In an emergency, don't jump before you think. Take a moment, breathe, and figure out your priorities. And remember this too, while communication is key, actions always speak louder.
You can't solve a crisis with words. You know, we had a client that had a really horrible tragedy. It was a mass shooting situation. And the CEO came in and wanted to convey, you know, we're going to be here for the community as they recover. We're here for the affected customers and employees. And he wanted to tell everyone that. And he said, you know, I just want everyone to know that our company is doing the right thing and that we're going to be here for the long haul. And the problem with that, even though he had the best of intentions, is that how is he going to tell people that? Probably through some sort of a press conference or a media statement. And honestly, that statement, whatever he provides, is going to go through so many lawyers that on the flip side of it, it won't have that genuine emotion that he wanted to convey in the first place. And I'm not sure that people will just kind of take your word for it. They want to see you in the community day after day. And that's far more effective than if you're just telling them that you're committed. So the words have to reflect the reality of what the company is doing. In the example I was talking about, the CEO who wanted so much to convey this empathy decided, okay, well, let's go to the hospitals in the area and meet with the victims and their families and ask them what we can do to support them. So instead of talking about it in the press conference, he actually just did the actions that he was talking about. And I think media can catch up to that. So going back to the kindergarten analogy, I think this is a good one for show and tell. It's about showing your commitments through your actions rather than just telling people about them.
And what I find interesting here is this is a very kind of a human reaction to things. And yet you're having to fight a lot of the natural human reactions to solving problems. It's a kind of a dichotomy there of be human, but don't be too human. Or how does that work when you're trying to talk to folks and convince them it's the right way?
Yeah, in a crisis, it's you're working with people who are experiencing some of their most stressful days. So you get the whole range of human emotion, from people really clamming up to it's the fight or flight, right? Like, let's get out there and fight this. And so there's no right and wrong way to handle grief. For example, our best advice can be, let's be thoughtful about this. Sometimes when we walk into a crisis, the company will have every TV on and everyone has their laptops pulled up and they're looking at all the media coverage coming in live. And there's just so much noise. I think the best advice we can give is to try to find some quiet, turn off the TVs and let's talk about who is the most priority audience right now? Who matters most to the business? What's the best way to reach them? What do they need right now? And how can we best support them? And I think it's really about pragmatism. This is a long process. A crisis can take a long time to resolve. So in the early days, it's really about figuring out what can we do.
In a crisis, it's easy to feel overwhelmed. Things move fast. It's hard to keep track. So focus on your immediate surroundings. Start with your people. Talk with them before communicating with the public. And be mindful of what you share.
I think that this might be a semantics thing more than anything, but there is a difference between transparency and honesty and forthrightness. The goal is to be honest and forthright. But transparent to me means telling everybody everything you know. And growing up, my mom always said, you don't have to tell everybody everything you know. and I think that's right. The details can get you in trouble. The situation is evolving very quickly. We don't have all the facts. But the people who are in the community, for example, probably have pretty basic questions in the first hours and days of a crisis. So in a product recall, is my product safe? In a cyber breach, is my data involved? In a disaster, hey, you had an issue at this facility. I work at another facility. Do you have that same issue? People have some pretty basic information that they want to know. And so if you can provide that, all of the details are really just providing extra color.
And truth be told, when all attention is on your business, you'll want to blend in instead.
In a crisis, we want to be boring. We don't want this to be salacious. And every new detail is a new round of media coverage. And we really just want to convey, here's the important information you need to keep yourself safe or whatever it is for that particular crisis. That's what we have a duty to provide people. We don't have a duty to provide every detail, at least on day one. So we talk about communicating in themes, and broad themes are things like, we're taking this seriously, we found the problem, we're fixing it, it's safe to be in the area, we're investigating the cause, or we're supporting the victims. So if you can communicate broadly in themes like that, it's a lot more effective than trying to provide every detail and kind of forcing people to sift through that detail to find what they're really looking for.
When you start talking or talking to the public, do they trust the message at first, or do you have to build that up? Is that part of it, is rehabilitating that trust?
Absolutely. And trust is actually a really interesting topic in crisis management right now. As I'm sure wouldn't surprise you, there's just a lot of skepticism right now and a lack of trust in institutions and in corporations. We saw this really prominently with COVID when it was a global disaster and the institutions of government and science and some of these hallmark institutions that used to be the most credible sources are now not really trusted. And we also have a lot of disinformation, and it's what I call living in a post-truth world where there's not a real consensus about truth, which is actually a very scary thing. But it's this idea of, I've got my facts, you have your alternative facts, and we all have our echo chambers. There's this cognitive dissonance where we believe what we want to believe. And so it means that companies can no longer say, you know, trust us, like, we got this. The corporation is no longer this revered institution. And people used to stay at a company for their whole careers. And there was so much brand loyalty among customers. And that just doesn't exist anymore.
The thing with trust is, when it's not there, you can't simply ask for it. You need to earn it. And that takes work. So step by step, show up in the field and take action. Sydney will tell you from experience, people believe in what they see.
One of our clients had a really terrible gas pipeline explosion that was fatal. It killed several people. And they wanted to do the right thing and they wanted to change and fix it. And so they wanted to tell everyone, hey, we've inspected this many miles of pipe. We've rebuilt our processes and we've retrained our employees. And they had some good information that they just wanted to show people that they did get it, they were changing. But if you just had this horrible disaster that resulted in multiple fatalities, you can say, hey, look how great we are. We're doing all the right things. Nobody trusts you at that point due to the crisis. But if you go out into your backyard where there's a pipeline under the ground and you see people in trucks inspecting lines and they've got all their instruments and hard hats, that's going to resonate a lot more with you than them issuing 12 press releases about all these great new initiatives they have. So I think you have to rebuild trust really brick by brick by showing up and showing your face. And honestly, employees can really serve as an effective spokesperson for the company in that if you see them in the field, they live and work in the same community. So it's a lot more compelling than this, you know, fancy corporate statement.
Do you ever see companies at emerging crisis or a crisis occurring? It seems like they don't recognize that there's a crisis. It seems like sometimes things get pretty down the road before there's any response. How does that work?
So some crises are very binary in that, you know, it either happened or it didn't. There was an explosion or there wasn't, right? You know that you have a crisis. But so many, and I think probably harder crises, are these slow simmer crises. And I think it's challenging for companies, especially a big organization, to connect the dots around the company. So you might hear, you know, chatter amongst employees on this side, and then you got a customer complaint on this side, and then you know, investor asked a question on the earnings call about this. And do you have within the organization enough of an ear to the ground to connect those dots and see that they're not just one-off things, but that they together paint a mosaic of you might have an issue? So I think building some of that infrastructure within the company to know that the right hand's talking with the left hand can be important for surfacing things.
The point of a crisis is that we don't see it coming. But with some forward thinking and just a little bit of strategy, we can mitigate risk. So here's the plan. First, assemble a team and think logistics.
One of my clients back in December had a big cyber breach and they had to take their systems offline. So they couldn't communicate via email. They had to take their corporate website offline. So do you have a phone tree, an old-timey phone tree, you know, with everybody's phone numbers in the same place? And have you thought about what resources should be around the table? There's so much happening in a crisis that sometimes these small details that seem like they're not that important can be. So depending on the type of crisis, who should be part of the team? It's hard to solve a crisis as a big team. You can't solve it by committee. But then we've also seen clients have a small team that doesn't have the right resources. So some of it's just the nuts and bolts of, do we have the right pieces in place? Who's at the table? Do we know how to reach them? Some of that process stuff.
So are you organized? Good. Now it's time to be tactical. Put on your thinking cap and come up with a range of situations that could cause issues for your business. You'll need to think,
what are the scenarios that for our organization are most either likely or most destructive to the company if they were to happen? Things like a financial problem. Our executive could get ill or die in a car crash. Or if we're a manufacturing facility, there could be a fire at the facility or a product recall. And thinking about for each one, in this situation, what questions would I need to be asking? Which stakeholders would I need to be thinking about? Who would I need to reach out to? What are the channels that we would use to convey information in this case? Is it best to issue a press release, or do we make phone calls, or is it a statement, or can we send a letter to people? All of that's going to have to be adapted in the actual crisis, but it's a lot nicer to not start with a blank sheet of paper, that you've actually thought through some of that on the front end. It's a lot easier than, again, starting with nothing.
And once you have your plan of action laid out, test it.
I think a crisis plan can give people a false sense of security, you know, like, oh, it's all on paper. You just flip to page 74. And as we've talked about, crises are so fluid that the most important part is building alignment and really pressure testing it. Because on paper, everyone's going to flip through your crisis plan and think, like, oh, looks good, right? Everything on paper, you haven't tested it. So the minute you do something like a tabletop crisis simulation, then you can see, okay, does this actually make sense? And you might see that tension of, well, the legal team wants to do this, but the communications team wants to do that, but operations says we can't because of this. And those tensions start surfacing, which is great in a simulation. It's not great in an actual crisis. You want to have all of that stuff bubble up to the surface so you can then tweak things and make sure that everybody's familiar with our approach so that there's more alignment of how we're going to get through this.
Hey, it's Taylor from Cadence Bank. Switching to electronic payments for your business can lower costs, streamline operations, and provide greater flexibility and convenience. Automated Clearinghouse, or ACH, is a type of electronics funds transfer used for all sorts of transactions, direct deposit, electronic debits and credits, or tax payments. Learn more about how we can support you at cadencebank.com.
So we're going to put together a team, not too big, not too small. How about the people that are on that team? What type of qualities you want to see in a first responder type?
In terms of personality, we really do need an assertive and decisive leader who's going to make the decision at the end of the day. Having an executive that is human but decisive, is thoughtful and considering the full range of factors. They weigh all of the inputs and make a decision, because while it's the knee-jerk reaction and moving too fast is a problem, I also see paralysis. You also want someone who can run a meeting. And what I mean by that is saying, okay, here's the agenda. Here's the five things we got to decide between now and 4 o'clock. And, you know, you do this, you do that. And let's table this. Let's put a pin in that. We'll circle back, or, you know, bring me an answer by four, or, you know, really keeping people focused. If you can have somebody who's good at recognizing, break through the clutter, here's the things that matter, that'll help you a lot more too.
So I've seen some companies utilize kind of a public information officer, somebody that's always out there being the spokesman. Other companies use their CEO or their, you know, one of the C-suite folks. Is one better than the other as an approach, do you think?
Yeah, we do a lot of discussion about who is the appropriate face of the company in a crisis. Depending on how severe or significant the crisis is, you do want your executive out there to show, you know, we take this seriously, our response is coming from the top down. So I think the executive presence can be very effective. That said, sometimes you want to protect your executive and not put him or her out there the first minute. Sometimes it might be more effective to have someone like a PIO convey that information externally and preserve the executive for more of those critical moments of the crisis. It's also a matter of, have you media trained your people? Because that's a key factor in talking about crisis planning. You do want to have people who are prepared to talk and to stay on message. And that's the most critical piece is, do you have a core set of messages that you can circle back to and bridge back to that story?
Yeah, I went through media training at a prior employer, and it's they tell us, like, no comments, not ever a good comment. There was some really good pointers in it that you don't want to be wondering what you're supposed to do when they throw you out in front of somebody.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people hate doing it because you're put on the spot. We do use camera. We don't do the ambush camera, but we do want people to practice seeing themselves so they can recognize what their body language is conveying. It can be uncomfortable, so I get it, but I do think it's worthwhile and pretty effective.
In times of crisis, knowing what to say and when to say it is delicate. So you want people on your side who can weigh in, make important decisions, and know how to speak to the media. Give your people the tools to help. Remember, this work is not a one-time thing. It's a philosophy of practice that will weather many storms.
So you've been doing this for 20 years. It's had to have changed a lot during that 20-year period. What are some of the big changes you've seen in crisis management over the last few years?
Yeah, the social media angle. Everything has a social media component. Every crisis, even if it's not a social media crisis, it's got that angle, which is complicating in a lot of ways for obvious reasons, but they're very quantifiable. So you can see what's online, how many people accessed it, what was the sentiment, how viral is it? When the company said this, did it help or did it hurt? You can learn a lot. So there is that silver lining on the digital component that can actually help the company have more intelligence in how it should communicate in a crisis.
Another thing with social media, it's changed the way we think about privacy and visibility. To understand this, just look at influencers.
With influencers, what's so interesting is that the familiarity with somebody breeds trust. It's almost like, you know, everyone thinks if you saw Jennifer Aniston on the street, you'd go up to her and say, hey, and have a cup of coffee, because we feel like we're friends, right? Because we've watched her for so many years. And I think it's kind of like that, where when you see somebody come across your screen so many times, you start to think that you know them. And so even in a crisis, all visibility is effectively good visibility, because you're building reputation with people. And attention spans are so short these days, especially on social media type crises. It's just not as scary as it used to be, because you kind of think it's going to blow over pretty quickly. You know, I got a call from a social media star who was in a crisis, and we advised him on, okay, here's how you can fly under the radar. Let this pass. Stay quiet. Be boring. Issue a real short statement and, you know, disappear for a while. Come back a little bit later and this is over. And he said, like, no way. That totally changes how you handle a crisis, right? Because my job is to decrease visibility, and your job as an influencer is to get as much visibility as possible.
That's very interesting. Does that mean that companies should be using, or would it help companies to be using more social media just for good things, just advertising what they do or talking about what their plan is or talking about a charitable gift or whatever, and really getting in social media with that stuff so that you can start building up some trust of your company?
Yeah, I think, you know, as I say, the best defense is a good offense. And I think building reputation in times of peace, when you're not in a crisis, is definitely a good idea, because the minute you're in a crisis and then all of a sudden you try to build reputation with people and start talking about all these great things we're doing, you know, then it looks really disingenuous or self-serving, or as we talked about, at that point, you've lost their trust anyway. So if you enter the crisis in a position of having a bad reputation already, it's going to be a lot worse than if you're entering it from a stronger position.
With the world we live in, it's not a question of if, but when a crisis will strike. If you've experienced this in your business, we'd love to hear your stories. So leave a comment in your podcast app. In the interim, just remember, crises aren't one size fits all. Some emergencies are binary. An oil spill or mass shooting, they just happen. But things like personal misconduct or cybersecurity breaches, they build over time. You can spot them before they come to a head, so keep your ear to the ground. When something happens, sit down, find some quiet, and think about your priorities. Work in circles. First, take care of your stakeholders. Then worry about communicating with the public. But remember, actions will build trust and do a lot more for your business than a press conference. You'll need a good team to make it happen. Choose people with relevant expertise who will be collected, empathetic, and decisive. Give them the tools to handle challenges. That can look like media training, a social media plan, or just a good list of contacts to call for help. Finally, when the pressure to act is strong, remember,
handle the crisis by doing what's best for the people who matter most. And it's really not a lot more complicated than that.
I'd like to thank Sydney Isaacs for making it simple for us today and for supporting our businesses through it all. If you ever cross paths with Sydney, well, we promise she's the calm before, during, and after the storm. This was In Good Companies, the podcast we do business on your terms. To hear more from our inspiring guests, follow on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And when business is hot, you'll be the first to know. If you enjoyed the show, leave a review and a 5-star rating, of course. And be sure to share this podcast. There's plenty to go around. In Good Companies is a podcast from Cadence Bank, member FDIC, equal opportunity lender. Our production team is Natalie Barron and Edie Pingelli. Our executive producer is Daniel Cornell. This podcast is made in collaboration with the team at Lower Street. Writing and production from Lise Lavati. Sound design and mixing by Ben Crown.
This podcast is provided as a free service to you and is for general informational purposes only. Cadence Bank and its affiliates make no representation or warranties as to the accuracy, completeness, or timeliness of the content in the podcast. The podcast is not intended to provide legal, accounting, or tax advice and should not be relied upon for such purposes. The views and opinions expressed by the host and guests in this podcast are solely their own current opinions regarding the subject matters discussed in the podcast and are based on their own perspectives. Such views, perspectives, and opinions do not reflect those of Cadence Bank or any of its affiliates or the companies in which any guest is or may be affiliated. The production and presentation of this podcast by Cadence Bank does not imply the expression of any opinion on part of Cadence Bank or any of its affiliates.